Help us spread the word. Share it with one person. Just one. Just walk up to somebody random and say, help me with HIPAA.
Please listen to Help Me With HIPAA.
Just listen. Don't ask questions. Just listen.
They're goofy.
You're listening to the Help Me With HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax. HIPAA help is on the way.
Welcome to episode 365 of the Help Me With HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims of HIPAA for MSPs, and joining me is Donna Grindle of Cardin. Good afternoon, Donna.
Hello, David.
This is a momentous episode because as of today, you can listen to our podcast every single day for a year.
That'll be tough.
Even. We now have 365 episodes, and if it's a leap year, you got some extras.
And there we go.
Yep, and we're off.
Wasn't ready for that one.
If that wasn't enough for you, we also have the Privacy and Security Boot Camp coming up.
That's yeah. Right.
PriceSec Boot Camp is going to be at PriceSecBootCamp.com. Well, for now, but it's actually going to be live in person.
Yeah, come join us. Days. It's going to be an interesting session. That's for sure.
Yep. So 3.5 days of awesomeness, September 12, 13, 14, and 15. So if you want to know what we're going to be talking about, we're going to be talking about things like supply chain risk management. We're going to be talking about documentations, training programs, policies and procedures, risk management, and then what to do when it all goes wrong.
That's right. The dumpster fire on the last day.
Yeah.
Murphy's Law Day. But yeah. A lot of people have mentioned, hey, I didn't know that that was something I should go to. Here's the bottom line. If you need to know about like how these programs work more than just what a workforce person training is, so whether you're an attorney, a business owner, any random compliance officer of any sort.
Any random person on the street.
That, right. You're in IT. You do software development.
Honestly, I can cut it down even further, make it easier. Okay. If you're listening to this podcast, then you probably should be there.
Mm-hmm. That is true. So join us.
Yep. We're going to have Louisville. We're going to have speakers coming from places like Cardin. And Black Talent Security and Comply Assistant and Sphere and Security Metrics, and even one from OCR.
That's right. We got a lot going on. So bring it, people. Bring it.
That's right. So check it out and more at our website at PriceSecBootCamp.com. Mm-hmm. All right. So we like to always thank our donors and people who give us a shout out. And we've got a recent shout out here. A 5-star review.
Yeah.
Donna. Yeah. And so this is kind of one of those things where, like, I don't know if they're being nice or if they're poking fun.
They being nice. They being nice.
So anyway, it's titled Awesome Information for the HIPAA Professional. And it's spelled correctly, y'all.
Yeah. So that now we know they are a HIPAA professional.
That's right. Get a 5-star review and it reads, David and Donna are the best.
No. It says Donna and David.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Let's get this.
David and Donna are the best. They are goofy, but succeed in making HIPAA fun. I listen every week and I always learn something new. I can't wait for the PriceSec Boot Camp. Bring on the fire hose.
We'll be there. Fire hosing away.
That's right. We'll bring all of our goofiness with us. So thanks to whomever you are. What was the name on that? T.
Stamper. I don't know. We don't do the names anymore because people got in trouble.
Oh, that's right. So
it's not you. It's other people.
That's right.
So we just don't do the names unless somebody that's says right. Yes. Say my name.
I tell you what, send us a recording of you saying your name and we'll put it on the podcast.
Guaranteed. There you go.
But thanks for that. And if you want to leave us one, please go to wherever you listen to this podcast and leave us a review. We love them. It's like doggy treats for us.
Particularly David.
Particularly me. I know. I'll lay down and roll over for one.
Yeah. At and get your belly scratched.
Oh, yeah. All right. Cool deal. So that leads us into our HIPAA say what? Oh, man. So got some guidance that came out, like, you know, how HIPAA rules permit covered health care providers and health plans to use remote communication technologies.
For audio only telehealth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one takes both of us to get the whole title out. That's why everybody's just like happy that we're going to read it and tell them what it says.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. This came out, and in it says that the HHS OCR developed this guidance to help covered entities understand how they can use remote communication technologies for audio-only telehealth in compliance with the HIPAA rules, comma, including when OCR's notification of enforcement discretion for telehealth remote communications is no longer in effect.
Warning.
Y'all should be paying attention. They're pointing out this is coming. So the question was, you know, can HIPAA-covered entities use remote communication to provide telehealth audio only in compliance with the privacy rule? Yes. That part wasn't really hard for us to get to. We could have done that without extra guidance, I think. But then came the other two parts, which I'm going to say it may be surprising to some people. How about that? We'll just kind of leave it at that. Because here it is in black and white for all of those who say, I don't believe you. You need to show me where that's written. Here we go.
Nobody says that to you.
Never said. So do covered healthcare providers and health plans have to meet the requirements of the HIPAA security rule in order to use remote communication technologies to provide audio-only telehealth services? Yes, in certain circumstances. That is a fact-specific determination.
Mm-hmm.
But they point out clearly in this something that we have been telling people but had little response to people actually listening to us. All right.
I think this is where people go, that's just your opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't spend all day every day reading on it. No, that's not it. Here it is. The HIPAA security rule does not apply to those services using a standard telephone line, as in old school, pick it up, crank it, and ask to speak to BR549 and put the It's not electronic. It's what we call an analog phone. You pick it up, the phone is active all the time, and you call somebody, and, you know, back in the old school days, that standard telephone line, not covered under security rule. However.
Judy, can you connect me?
I go into classes now and I say, I'd like to know how many people have never dialed a phone like the old school with the you can push the buttons. That doesn't count.
Mm-hmm.
Have you never dialed? And some people would be like, I have. I did it at my grandmother's house when I was little.
Well, there's two things that we would do. One is we would have to pick up the phone to tell the neighbor to get off the phone.
That's right. The party line.
And when you tell people that, they're like, what? Like, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and when the phone would ring, it rang at both houses.
Yeah. Everybody.
And you'd be like, I'm sorry. You were going to call back and I'll let it keep ringing.
At least ours, we had our own numbers.
Yeah, which is crazy to think about. But there was also a time which I discovered that if you did like pound something, I don't know what it was, and hung the phone up, it would call you back. It would ring the phone back. It's so, my sister was like a 13-year-old at the time, and she was the one that would literally break her neck to get to the phone when it was ringing, mm-hmm. because for some reason, it was very important for her to answer the phone as a teenage girl.
Mm-hmm. I never went through that, but my sister did.
Well, I would pick the phone up and dial that number and hang it up and then run, and then watch her almost kill herself jumping through every obstacle in our way to get to that phone, you know, before, because, you know, we only had one phone. Mm-hmm. And so if you were at the other end of the house, you had to run, jump over the couch, slide under the cat, and grab the phone before anybody else did.
And he usually had a big, long cord. Those phones, not covered under HIPAA security rule. But if you're using any of the ones that we use today, then they may very well be covered under the HIPAA security rule. Things like using an app on a smartphone or another computing device, you know, like those desktop phones, soft phones, mm-hmm. VoIP technologies, period. It just says that, VoIP technology. So for all of you technical people, oh, well, we just do the phone system. We don't have to worry about the security rule. Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, and I imagine this is going to rule a lot of folks out that provide VoIP stuff that aren't paying attention to HIPAA.
Mm-hmm. Then we have technologies that electronically record or transcribe a telehealth session. So another area where you're probably doing that. Messaging services that electronically store audio messages. So a voicemail could technically now be considered PHI, even though for a long time people have said it's not. I'm not saying, I'm just saying. But then it points out that the covered entity's risk analysis and risk management should include these considerations of, is there a risk the transmission could be intercepted? Is it encrypted? Is there, where it's stored, going to be a problem with transcription or recordings? So on, so forth, and whatever. Anyway.
That's exactly what it says. So on, so forth, and whatever.
Whatever. So the point here is that, yes, you can do audio only, but all of you who have been claiming that the phone system doesn't count need to get up off it and get down with it. It does count, and it needs to be included in your risk assessment. How is that secured? And all of you voice vendors who have access to voicemail, all we have access to is their voicemail from patients, you mean? Yes. Anyway, I'm just saying, that should be on your risk analysis, should be part of the discussion. Then the other question they include is, do the HIPAA rules permit a covered entity healthcare, blah, 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 to conduct audio-only telehealth using remote communicate without a business associate agreement in place with the vendor? Yes, in some circumstances, which gets back to if it's a plain old phone system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the POTS technology.
Yep.
Plain old telephone service. There you go. Then you do not need, because it's just transit. It's just flying mm-hmm. across it. You do not need one, even if you're doing VoIP with your ISP, because it's just flying across it. However, they do point out that if you're using a smartphone app that could store PHI recordings or transcription or put something in the cloud for later use, then that app is no longer just transmitting. It now is doing create, receive, maintain, and transmit.
Yeah. Like our VoIP system, we have it set up to record every call, mm-hmm. which is very common with VoIP systems. So that way we can go back and listen for call quality.
Yeah. Or when somebody says, your person told me to do bleh. That's enough when you need it.
Yeah. And there's been a couple times when you know, somebody said blah, and we went back and was like, no, blah was never said.
We have it. Would you like to listen to it? And then they just get mad. Right?
They do get mad.
They get it's mad.
Like, yeah. I was trying to prove to you that it didn't happen, but I guess what I was really saying is you're a liar.
And that makes people mad.
I don't know. I don't know why.
It's, you know, it's one thing if you say it. It's another when you can prove it.
I know.
You know. Anyway. And you know, well, the sky is indeed blue, see? Near. It's purple. Okay. So you do need to be AA with the app developer before you could use the app, so on and so forth. You would need to be AA with the app if it uses to translate oral communication to another language, meaning they would have to listen to it to make sure there's proficient translation. So all those things where, you know, you need that BAA in place, y'all need to go read this. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. They also, HHS also released at the same time some guidance for consumers that helps them understand protecting the privacy and security of your health information when using your personal cell phone or tablet.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. That teaches individuals. So there you have it, my friend. That is your HIPAA say what part of the day.
No, you got to do it like me.
No. Not gonna. I haven't worked on it. Who knows where we'll go. It just can't happen.
All right. So we have some other newsworthy things to talk about.
Yeah, this is a whole news story. It's several different things that should be on your radar.
Yeah.
So news section number one, why we worry about supply chain issues. Why we keep talking about doing Hickscrim, and why the first day of the PriceSec boot camp is supply chain risk management.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not worried about these, you need to be there on that day. Mm-hmm. And all the rest, because if you're not worried about these, you're probably not worried about the rest either. So there's been a big data breach that I've been watching, and mostly because there's still a lot coming out about it, and I haven't really found where I feel comfortable with, is that really what happened? Really? Really? Because there's a lot of discussion about this, but... eye care leaders, the ophthalmology-specific EMR solution, so they had a big breach in December 2021, and more keep coming out about it. Since December, other healthcare-covered entities are notifying their patients, because overall, that looks like it's over 2 million patients involved in that EMR vendor data breach. Okay, so I bring that up because we think we may have surpassed it. 2 million, maybe, from one single vendor, we know it's over 2 million. That's enough reason to think maybe I should worry about my vendors. Because the new one that has been really making the rounds is the professional finance company, which they didn't even try to say how many patients were involved. What they said in theirs is, here's a list of all the vendors, all of the covered entities that we've notified. There are 660 of them. The total tally is yet to be seen, but you're seeing these notifications coming from all kinds of areas about this one case. So professional finance company is a accounts receivable management company, and they do assistance to various organizations, including healthcare providers. So here's a note to self. You could be on another, you get notified by a healthcare provider that uses them, but you could be also same breach your data with two or three other people that use them that you'll never hear about.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying. So what the story here is, that on February 26th, they detected and stopped a sophisticated ransomware attack in which an unauthorized third parties accessed and disabled some of the computer systems. They immediately engaged third-party forensic specialists to assist with securing the network environment and investigating the extent of our unauthorized activity. Federal law enforcement was also notified, and the ongoing investigation determined that an unauthorized third party accessed files containing certain individuals' personal information during the incident. They notified healthcare providers on or around May 5th. So let's talk about this just for a second, David.
I already know where we're going with this one. Without undue delay.
Without undue delay. So we have the scenario, February 26th, and I understand they had to get some details, but I would hope that they're notifying people there is a problem prior to May 5th. But this is why we go back and say that business associate agreements that allow them 60 days to then tell the upstream 60 days for them. And then, so if that happened two or three people below, so let's say you had somebody else doing the work for you, and then they outsourced it to professional finance, and you're the physician practice. If professional finance didn't tell until May 5th, then they got 60 days to tell you, and this happened in February.
Mm-hmm.
That can't drag out like that, because you're going to end up with egg on your face.
Yep.
Somewhere. And I actually had a you know, like I've mentioned before, that I told a vendor, peace out, because I told him this is non-negotiable. You can't tell me you get 60 days to tell me about it. Well, you'll still be able to meet your contractual obligations. It's not about the letter of the law. It's about undue delay. So we both know how that is.
Mm-hmm.
So keep in mind, 660 is the number that they're showing on here. 660 individual healthcare organizations. I think it's going to blow the 2 million out of the water.
Yeah, it certainly would be more than 500 to be reported. I'm telling
you. It's just one per group.
I know. I know there was a local imaging center that this happened to, or that was caught up in this. And I was on their website last week, and they just announced, like a couple of months ago, a data breach from something else. And so they've got on their website, they got both of these data breaches side by side on their website. We can go like, click here for more information. And I'm thinking, dude, those poor people, because both of the data breaches involved a third party, and mm-hmm. they're having to deal with it. It's not them. But man, if you're not dealing with supply chain properly, this is a mess.
Yes. And so it's not really certain on, okay, so we have the PFC one was in February. This one, they noticed on, boy, can you imagine Christmas Eve? On December 24th, 2021, we identified a security incident that impacted systems that contained our patient information. It doesn't say what kind of incident. It doesn't say what happened other than the, how did they phrase it? Within days, we were able to quickly contain the incident. So I'm sorry, days and quickly. Within days, we were you should be able to contain it in much less time than days. So hopefully they contained it. But then it's like contain the incident and resume serving patients. So they're not expecting people like us to read this clearly. But the investigation subsequently determined that between December 17th and December 24th, so for a week, 7 days, and And in those 7 days is when we would have at least had 2 episodes coming out saying, it's the holidays. Make sure you got everybody paying extra attention and that you're double checking everything. So, an unauthorized party gained access to our network and took copies of some of the documents on our system. Took them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it didn't say it was a ransomware attack, but it does say they took them. And we'll get back to that shortly in another news story about what happens when they take them. So they know data was exfiltrated in December, and then they turn around and have a vendor hit them in February. And you know they're not. Yeah, I mean, this can't be the only ones. With 660? So what we have to say about that is all of that wrapped around a handful of vendors, and you're looking at millions of patients and hundreds of healthcare providers involved, if not thousands of healthcare providers by the time you spread it all out.
Yeah. So you're going to talk about the notification time frame on this one?
Well, here's the thing.
It's also supply chain, because this radiology group also had to do with another imaging service group.
Oh, is that where they're saying that it was taken? Oh, in addition, okay, they've got a litany of things going on here. There's more than that one. I see what you're saying. So they also manage the operation for another. So they are the business associate of another radiology group.
Right.
And
look at the notification time frame on that one.
April.
So they noticed it on December 24th.
Oh.
January, February, March, April. 4 months.
They tell the other
group,
Charlotte Radiology, that they supervise and manage. And that's where Rock Hill comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
Charlotte and Rock Hill, that's David's stomping the ground. So that one is complex.
Yep. But we do know they were nowhere near the 60-day notification.
No. So, yeah, there's this again. This is why we worry about it no matter what your business associate does for you. Because in this one, you've got they were notifying their own patients, but they didn't notify it's too many variables. So something went awry there. Numbers weren't happening. People were in denial. I know how that happens. You know, and I push and push and push. Once we know patient names, it's got to go out. Now, you don't have to do it like, okay, I found one patient and then I found another. You'll never get done that way. You've got to do them in a bulk. So you do have to have some time to gather them all. But once you have a substantial number, it's time to get those things out. Clearly, that didn't happen here.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of other supply chain issues in healthcare.
I do want to point out one more thing.
Oh, wait.
About this one.
What?
And it's one of those things where I don't know, but I'm going to bring it up. Because
you're going to speculate in case we should.
Well, I'm going to say that as part of your incident response plan, you need to already have addressed this.
Mm-hmm.
In the second to the last paragraph of their incident notification to patients, it states, we have also set up a dedicated call center to answer questions about this incident. Patients with questions may call the call center at 1-855 blah, 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 Monday through Friday. You better have a business associate agreement with this call center. And they better understand what they're getting into here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I forget. I mean, because when we're involved, you know, we're helping them figure all that out. We've got it in the incident response plan, or we're called in going, whoa, you don't got an incident response plan? You know, let's deal with that. So, but yeah, your incident response plan is not, and business associates who will say, when I say, are you prepared to do the notification should you need to do so? And they're like, not our problem. I'm like, yeah, Blanche, it is. It is your problem. Read your contracts, and you could be required to notify. And then the other piece being, you want to start asking more questions about the incident response plan of your vendors. You want to know if they're down, how long, how, you know, do I just sit around and wait until you make a press release? No. I want to know, because you're impacting my business, I need to know what to plan for. So there's a lot of things that we're going to need to start asking more of the vendors, and the vendors are going to need to not give pushback, but to expect it. Do I like it as a vendor? No, no one would, but I wouldn't like it as a client either.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to be the one that's the leg up, you might want to be, you know, HIPAA for MSPs. That's the kind of stuff we teach you. Anyway.
Okay, carry on.
Carrying on now. So the other big news that came out is Cisco, it's a well-known networking equipment company, and they do software and all kinds of things. But Cisco routers and devices that do communications, big deal in the industry. Often used in more complex environments, we'll say. And it's not, at least from what I could tell, I'm not certain exactly what products were involved in this. But they made counterfeit Cisco products. This is a company, and they had 15 different Amazon storefronts, 10 eBay storefronts, and multiple other entities that imported tens of thousands of fraudulent and counterfeit Cisco networking devices from China and Hong Kong, and then resold them to customers in the United States and overseas, representing them as brand new and genuine.
Mm.
So they got millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars, but the retail value they think is about $1 billion in retail value that they sold, and I think they netted about $100 million. So this one guy who, you know, it's one where it's this name, Onur Aksoy, then AKA Ron Aksoy, AKA Dave Durden. Dude's only 38 from Miami. 19 companies formed in New Jersey and Florida, along with all their storefronts and such. But a bunch of these were apparently sold into healthcare. And that's not good.
Mm-mm.
That's not good because we don't know what else may be on those. You know, we've talked about this before. If they aren't for real and there's software running on them, what could that software also be doing?
Taking the data.
Yes. So in July 2021, they executed a search warrant at the warehouse and seized at that time 1,156 counterfeit devices with a retail value of over $7 million. So it's going to take some time to figure out where Dave from Florida, a Florida man. Did you see the naked Florida guy riding on the truck, the 18-wheeler, like on the trailer of the 18-wheeler naked?
No, I hadn't seen
in the rain. Thankfully, it's just the backside, but that was out there. I'm like, surely that's no, wasn't Photoshop. From what
I was it? Sure. Was he advertising Boston Butts?
Yeah, it was some sort of white meat. There you go. So anyway, so this is the thing, is that if you have Cisco devices, you might want to make sure that somebody's looking into it and you're asking them, oh, by the by, did you buy that directly from Cisco or a third party? If the answer is a third party, then send them to the links that we have because the Department of Justice is involved. This is when you're the DOJ arrest you, they ain't playing. They already got the goods. The DOJ doesn't even bother with the case unless they can nail it down with it's a pretty solid, unsinkable ship if they go into it. So it's not doesn't look good.
Yeah. You know, if you're an MSP, then somebody, you know, you find out, hey, I'm able to get this expensive equipment for half price. You might be all over that.
Yep. So if you were buying from, what was the name of the company? Because they were selling direct to government and healthcare, but you know, if they had all those storefronts, they were selling to others. It was, yeah, because they were selling 95 to 98% off. Cisco MSRP. So I'm like, first of all, that should give you a little bit of a heads up.
Yeah. So we got Pro Network LLC, NetTech Solutions, Target Network Solutions, Easy Network, Ace Netus, My Network Dealer.
It's tons of them. So there is a Bleeping Computer article that has all of those names and tells you about the, you know, they made them look new. They made them look factory sealed and all that kind of stuff with the proper stickers and all of that. But, you know, you can create a sticker with a printer. Anyway, so if you have purchased Cisco devices, highly recommend that you check out the articles. We have the links to them. Just get up to date. And if you use Cisco devices, you want to make sure somebody is indeed checking those out.
Yeah. So did you see the part of the article, though, where Cisco actually reached out to the guy? Seven different times between 2014 and 2019.
Yeah.
For 5 years, Cisco been sending him letters saying, stop trafficking counterfeit goods.
But I mean 5 years it took before somebody was like, okay.
Yeah, but don't
they stopped them last year.
I know, but 2014, when I got the first letter, I'd be like, whoop, somebody's on to me. I'm done.
They just made about five more companies.
I mean, it's like, oh,
they're like, we're so little. Nobody cares.
Yeah, we're too small to have a problem.
Besides, maybe they sent the letter to one. They didn't send the letter to Dave. They sent it to Ron.
Yeah, maybe.
They're like, you know. Yeah. Or Onar, I don't know. It's clear that this has gone on for a while, and there are a ton of these devices out there. So make sure that you look into it if you have Cisco equipment and that you ask the questions.
Yeah, and just to reiterate, this is not something he just started doing. This goes all the way back to 2014. So,
it's been out there a while.
Yeah, if you've got a box is 3 or 4 years old, you might want to look at it. That's crazy, man.
Yeah. So anyway, the fact that they had sold them into government and healthcare, you know, healthcare entities, who knows, because stuff gets handed down. You know, if you're, even if you're in a big system, you're handing down stuff, it's worth going and looking into this stuff. So
yep.
Check
if
it
it's too good
out.
To be true.
Then it is. Anything that creates an emotional response, regardless of what that emotion is, joy, anger, you feeling naughty, whatever it is,
you're
it's a
feeling
scam.
Naughty. That's why I bought that Cisco router. I was feeling naughty.
I'm getting naughty with it.
Well, I mean, you know, from my perspective, when I sell it, you know, I'm selling a particular hardware product and somebody's like, oh, I can get that half price over here at such and such. And I'm like, yeah, you go right ahead. Because, I mean, if you're buying it that far below my cost, there's something wrong with you. Something wrong.
Well, speaking of something wrong, you ready to move on to the other part that we hate talking about because we have to talk about it all the time?
But we never talk about it.
Ransomware. Yeah.
Well, yeah. As soon as we get off this call, I got to go run somewhere.
Ba-dum-bum. We're going to have to get more sound effects there, David. So this there's a couple of things. One is when I was following up on the bleeping computer story about the Cisco thing, there was a new one out today as we're recording this, where two ransomware gangs and a data extortion group, you know, their whole this stolen data thing that we just talked about, they're adding a search function on their leak site so that it'll be easier for victims to find themselves and specific details of what they've stolen. So, you know, for those that the data was stolen or you're told the data wasn't stolen, you can go there and check out and search for stuff. And it's the Black Cat ransomware operation and the, it's, you know, one of the ALPHV, you know, the upside down. Anyway, they've created a searchable database where you can look for file names or the content and images. So there you gotta, okay, just for all of you who think you can just cover these up.
Yeah, I think this is a fantastic idea.
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciate the bad guys making it more convenient for everybody else to see what they're able to do successfully. And I'm sincere when I say that, because for these people, they're like, it won't happen to me, or is this really that big of a problem? The mm-hmm. more press that it gets, even if it's self-generated, the better.
Right. Well, and, you know, there's several different, and the gangs are doing it now to show, they're trying different approaches to this. Some are Lockbit, shows you the file names, and so needless to say, if you're hit by one of these, don't make too many assumptions that your data wasn't stolen, it's not out there, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and we haven't talked about it in a long time, but keep in mind that the MO of some of these gangs is to call your patients.
Yeah. Well, what they'll do is they'll call it and say they're calling on your behalf and demand that they get their credit card mm-hmm. to pay things off. Or they'll demand, depending on what kind of practice you run, you know, let's say your plastic surgery, they may call up and say, hey, I'm going to publish this or sell it to the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. At most, they're making it harder and harder to not pay them. You know, at best, they are making it easier for law enforcement to find them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the big thing, is that once they get in and you don't pay them, and you're in healthcare and they've got your patient data and they're going to publish it, well, you know, that gets into very fact-specific determinations with your attorney involved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have that. So speaking of why we would need to worry about that, is we had this, October 2020, we got an alert that a specific ransomware gang was targeting healthcare, and boy, in December of 2020, it just blew up. Ransomware attacks in healthcare were insane. So this came out July 6th. Was that Friday?
Mm-hmm.
Wednesday. Thursday. Anyway, recently from us recording, since we last recorded, this came out and it is a notice from CISA. We kind of do pay attention to them. They generally do know. FBI, CISA, and Treasury were all mentioned in here. The North Korean state-sponsored cyber actors apparently, since at least May, are doing things to target the healthcare and public health, HPH, sectors, organizations. And they are using Maui ransomware. So if you hear the word Maui ransomware, now we're talking about North Korea going after the information because they like to make money off of us too. We don't trade with them, so they got to, you know, get it another way. So they've released for the technical people, there's tactics, techniques, and procedures, TTPs, and IOCs, the indicators of compromise on how Maui ransomware works. But the bottom line here is they are urging the HPH sector organizations to apply the recommendations in the mitigation section of this release to reduce the likelihood of compromise, and that victims of Maui ransomware should report the incident to the local FBI and or CISA. So keeping these things in mind, the advisory specific as far as the technical details, you don't want to hear all of that, but it's AES 128-bit encryption. And I always tell people, if you're doing 128-bit, you need to be figuring out how to get off that. Well, mm-hmm. Here you go. It encrypts the target files with 128-bit encryption. So you're going to need to start cracking that stuff. And luckily they can, but the problem is it takes a lot of processing power to do. So, and who knows how much screwed up stuff when they write the code, because remember, they spend all their time encrypting, not decrypting.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we should do a scary episode about what's going to happen when quantum computers hit the market.
Well, that NIST released a whole new thing on encryption to deal with quantum computers. So,
yeah, but
trying not to scare them.
Yeah, I was reading through that the other day, and my wife, I'm sitting there shaking my head. My wife's like, "What's wrong?" And so I tried to explain it to her, and she's like, "So you mean to tell me like all encryption's going to break overnight?" I'm like, "Yes."
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so. I said, what would take normally, you know, like 4,000 years to do is going to be instantaneous.
Mm-hmm. So they're working on that. Everybody knows it's coming. It's kind of like talking about the Y2K bug in the 80s when everybody said they didn't care.
Yeah.
Even though I talked about it. But the Maui ransomware, because it encrypts the files with AES 128, but then it also encrypts the keys with RSA, and then it does, I mean, there's layers and layers of encryption that it puts one on top of each other. But here's a key element. This is not a spray and pray, we get you to click on something and it immediately runs the ransomware. This is human-operated ransomware, H-O-R, which mm-hmm. we don't say the, but anyway, this is what we had a conversation about earlier in the year, that it was becoming human-operated ransomware is becoming the next big thing because they get more control and they're doing it with businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So when they moved from going after the folks with just the consumers and went to businesses, they have gotten a whole lot better. But the important thing to note is they create a log of all the files they encrypt, and then they likely exfiltrate and decrypt it to use it for further ransomware requirements out of you. So just know, there is a list on the CISA alert about how to limit or the mitigations and the user account. It's all stuff you've already known to do, but make sure your IT folks are looking at it and making sure that you are addressing these things.
Mm-hmm.
It does point out that you should be following the regulations of HIPAA. Just in case you're not, because yeah, we know that. And it also says, monitor whether IoT devices are behaving erratically. Because they've been involved in all of those too. So there you have it. Just to make your day, we wanted to end with a big bang. North Korea is going after healthcare.
As if you didn't have something else to worry about. All right, folks, that is our show for today. Thanks for listening. Be sure to review our episode and review our podcast. We appreciate it. Help us spread the word. Share it with one person. Just one. Just walk up to somebody random and say, "Help me with HIPAA."
Please listen to Help Me With HIPAA.
Just listen. Don't ask questions. Just listen.
They're goofy.
All right, folks, for Donna and myself, remember, HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me With HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.